At least 58 people now dead, more than 500 people wounded.
17 fires burning right now in the state, 5,700 structures destroyed, at least 35 people dead.
I mean, this was a massive church just outside of San Juan with a congregation of 3,000 people. Maria just shredded this building.
ISIS released a new video today showing the execution of 21 Coptic Christians kidnapped in Libya.
Two suicide bombings killed more than 40 people on one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar.
North Korea fires yet another missile, but Pyongyang claims this one will be able to hit the U.S. mainland, striking cities like Los Angeles, Denver, even New York and Boston.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Randy Reams is pastor of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. Join Pastor Randy now as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
First Samuel chapter 26. And because I can, I'm going to read the text out of my Bible without glasses. Because my God can. The Ziphites went to Saul at Gibeah and said, "Is not David hiding in the hill of Hakaliah? I had that right. Which faces basically Jerusalem. It's away from Jerusalem. So Saul went down to the desert of Ziph, and there with 3,000 chosen men of Israel to search for David. Saul made his camp beside the road on the hill facing Jerusalem, so David stayed in the desert. And when he saw Saul had followed him there, he sent out scouts and learned that Saul had definitely arrived." Why would you think that was? He was wondering that question? Remember when he ran into him in the cave? Yeah, he thought Saul was done. He had to make sure, really, is this Saul? He told me that. Then David set out and went to the place where Saul had camped, and he saw where Saul and Abner, son of Ner, commander of the army, had laid down, and Saul was lying inside the camp, with the army encamped around him. Then David asked Ahimelech the Hittite and Abishai the son of Zerah, Joab's brother, but later Joab does these great things. That's why they mention Joab's name. Which means, by the way, this means he's David's nephew, if you read this later, okay? "Who will go into the camp with me to Saul?" Now, put this in context. There are 3,000 men around Saul. He's in the middle. Who wants to walk in the midst of 3,000 of your enemies? Any volunteers? Thank God there's always been volunteers. Anyway, "I'll go with you," said Abishai. So David and Abishai went to the army by night, and there was Saul, lying asleep inside the camp with his spear stuck in the ground near his head. And Abner and the soldiers were lying around him asleep. And Abishai said to David, "Today the God has delivered your enemy into your hands. Now let me pin him to the ground with one thrust of the spear, and I won't strike him twice." In other words, I could do this quiet. But David said to Abishai, "Don't destroy him. Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As surely as the Lord lives," he said, "Lord lives." He said, "The Lord himself will strike him, either his time will come and he will die, or he will die or perish in battle. But the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. Now get the spear, the water jug that is near his head, and let's go." So David took the spear and the water jug near Saul's head, and they left. No one saw or knew about it, nor did anyone wake up. They were all sleeping because the Lord had put them into a deep sleep. You may be seated. And it doesn't mean the pastor was preaching boring and everybody went to sleep. Because sometimes I look at her and it looks like the Lord's put some of you to sleep. I want to remind you of chapter 23. This is similar, is it not, to when David's hiding in a cave. Saul goes into cave to do his business. I put it that way. David sneaks up on him. That is something common there between the two. But sneaks on him and cuts his robe. Remember that? Holds up the piece of the robe. Said, I spared your life today. This is very reminiscent of that. Okay? And we talked about, I think that was Mother's Day that came up. And we talked about that. And so we'll make some comparisons between the two. But we won't focus on the main point that most commentarians or preachers focus on. And that is what we would call, I talked about it then, the principle of representation. We will mention that. That is, God put him in his place to do his work. We don't touch him. Okay, that kind of thing. See, the first event, David could definitely see God's divine providence. We call them circumstances or coincidences. It just happened that Saul happened to wander into the cave that David was in. Wow, this ain't no accident. Look at that. But in this case, David hears Saul's coming, sends spies or scouts to find out exactly where he's at, gets on the hilltop to spy down at the camp in the valley. This isn't just a circumstantial, accidental encounter. So in that sense, it's very different. You can see that in verse 5. We find that Saul is laying in the middle of the men. That's pretty smart. I mean, come on. Last time you went to do your business, the guy you're trying to kill snuck up on you. So this time, you're not going anywhere. As a matter of fact, you're not going anywhere without your bodyguard, Abner. And your men around you are going to sleep in the middle of it. And so when David looks down, what gets in him? You got to ask. You look down, there he is. There's 3,000 men. That's probably a pretty good sized camp. Okay? 3,000. And you look down and go, hey, let's go in there. See, the last time you were close enough to this guy and he knew you were there, he threw a spear at you. So let's say for the sake of argument, you're surrounded there. About a quarter of the guys you got to sneak through. Depends on the path through there. What if one's a light sleeper? And there should have been guards on duty. But God had put them to sleep. They didn't know that at the time. Okay? So he asked for volunteers among these two fellows. Okay? Ahimelech's a Hittite. Who else do we know in the story of David's a Hittite?
Bathsheba's husband.
Okay, so we know that David obviously has learned to hire what we would call mercenaries. People from other countries that were with him in his band. And we read about that when he was the cave of Adullamah. You know, at that time, 300, 400 unhappy guys came along, turned to 600. We don't know how many there are at this point. Okay. What's interesting is you think about it, you're able to sneak in behind the enemy lines, right up to the headquarters, to the general. You get that far, and Abishai goes, this ain't no accident. He realizes that if everybody's asleep, because there's always a guard on duty, of course, and nobody wakes up, we ain't that quiet. He recognizes the hand of God in this. But here's the way he recognizes, Saul, this is your chance. Or David, this is your chance. And he asked permission of David to kill Saul with one blow. I'm not a skilled warrior. I'm not sure what that would look like. But I've seen enough movies, you know, they karate, you know, chop a guy and he goes down in one blow. That don't really happen. You know what I'm saying? In that sense. But somehow here, Abishai believes why would he want to kill him in one blow? Yeah, no screaming. Right. And so they wouldn't get caught in the middle of this. And of course, David's response to that, don't kill him. But I wonder how you would answer, Abishai. Wait a minute. I remember my last encounter. I did the right thing last time, and it got me nowhere. You think about that. Have you ever done the right thing, and it doesn't go better? You did the right thing and they still mistreat you. You did the right thing and they still defame your name. You did the right thing and they still sue you and take you to court. You did the right thing, but they still won't talk to you at family Thanksgiving gatherings. Come on, I know people, and some in this room, that you still haven't talked to your Uncle Fred, your sister, your brother, your mother, your aunt, because of an episode that happened 28 years ago, 15 years ago, 5 years ago. David did the right thing when he had an opportunity before. Now, here I am faced with the same opportunity. Why would I do the same thing again? I know what's going to happen. I know this guy, and I'll show you that when we get to the end. You know, it's hard to do the right thing when you're in the same situation you were before, whatever that is, and it didn't go your way. That's hard to do. We'll talk about that more. So David's response is, don't kill him. How can you stretch out? Anyone who stretches out their hand against God's anointed will not be guiltless. I don't care how bad a king he is. I don't care who he's chasing. You touch God's anointed. Again, now that's the principle of representation. You kill God's representative, you'll be held accountable for that. Did you know you can attack God's representative with words, not just with a spear? With an attitude, not just a spear. And we talked on Mother's Day, mothers being one of those representatives of authority in our lives, particularly when we're young. But David says this, I understand. Here he is, we can kill him right now. But he says, look, God's either going to kill him directly, kill him in battle. Directly would mean, you know, God strikes him dead or gives him a disease or something. Okay, or he'll kill in battle. Or he'll just die like everybody else. Those are the three options he presents. He's just going to grow. I'm fine with the other ones. I don't like the idea of growing old. Why should this guy be rewarded with good life when he misbehaves? But he leaves that up to God. It is hard when the person who treats you poorly, you're willing to say, well, if everything goes well with him and he just gets to live the... No, he shouldn't live the normal life. He should pay. She should pay. No, but he's okay with that. Do you remember the O.J. Simpson trial? How many of you said, it's okay with that? That he got away, that's okay. He's guilty, but this is all right. If he goes on and lives a normal life like everybody else and is happy, that's okay. We weren't happy with that, most of us. And even those who were for it at the time, after watching O.J. Simpson's character for a while, realized that maybe that was a mistake, okay? But at the time, you're going, wait a minute, that ain't right. We really bother it when we see it as one of our officials, a government official, gets by with the crime and you go, if it was a regular guy like us, we'd never get by with that. That's Saul. Saul's the government officials getting by with it, who's getting by with doing the wrong thing. And David was okay. Well, it's all right if he just stays in office and does his term and retires and lives life with his grandkids. That's okay. I can't do that. Is hard for me. I'm going to be honest. I'm not too sure I can say that part. If God kills him, I can go with that. Or somebody else kills him, I can handle that. Wait a minute, to live like everybody else, I'm not sure I can deal with that one. Okay? But that's the options he puts forth. And instead, he tells the guy to take Saul's spear and canteen. Says jug or jar, but he's not carrying around a big jug like you see Lady carrying on her head and all those Bible flanographs. Yeah, that you used to have. Remember? Anybody remember those little flannel things that stick in Sunday school? Okay. Now the big, not like that. It's a personal way of carrying water. So he's got his canteen. Why does he do that? Why does he? Well, we'll come to that. So he gets back out of the camp. They sneak out of the camp, get up on the next hillside, and he yells back across the hillside. Now, don't think of these hills as wooded. We showed them before in Jordan. They're pretty bare. So you don't have a bunch of woods to deaden the sound. You could holler across the canyon. What's the first thing David says? When we get to verse 16, 17, Abner, you're in trouble. Dereliction of duty. You are on guard. And listen, and he says that. You deserve the death penalty. Now, why in the heck did he do that? Why did he point out Abner's dereliction of duty? Comparison. I never did that, and he's chasing me. You deserve the death penalty for what you did. First thing he does is point out the guy that's worse than him. Nobody else in this room ever does that, right? But officer, everybody else was going faster than I was. Right, Tim? But Mom, they were... Adam and Eve started that one. He compares and says, this guy deserves the death penalty, but it's me you're chasing after in death. I mean, he doesn't say that in exact words, but he says, come on, Abner, look what you did. You deserve the death penalty. And he says this, if it is the Lord against me, if I've done something against God and this is some kind of repayment, I'll make an offering. Let me put it another way. If I sin against God, I'll repent. Okay, that's his response. That's what he's yelling out there. And then he said this, if it's men, cursed are they before the Lord. For they have driven me out today so that I would have no attachment with the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. What? If it's men, I know what men just trying to discourage me. And he knows this, if you get discouraged enough, you do give up on God. And you start finding other answers. How many books have been written on why bad things happen to good people? You know how many people have given up on God because the bad things happened to them? David's saying, well, if it's men, they should be cursed because they're the ones that are trying to get me to the point where I give up on God's inheritance in me and I just go join the pagan world, which he does right after this chapter. Okay. Yeah, next chapter, he runs off the gad again, by the way. Okay? So he says, wait a minute. If it's me, I'm repenting. If it's man, you should be cursed for doing this to someone. I've been in churches where they've driven other people out of the church. Maybe you haven't. I've seen families that drive somebody out of it. I know. So David, curse if you're doing this, if this is a man thing that's doing this, trying to get me off my destiny, my purpose, my inheritance in Christ, shame on you. You know somebody else said that. Jesus said it to Peter. When Jesus is talking about dying on the cross, Peter says, hey, no way. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. I know if you're trying to discourage what God has sent me to do, the thing I have, I know it ain't God. Then he speaks of that same thing, that principle of representation. We're not going to go on with that because we've done that. But he also recognizes the principle of reciprocity. It's a fancy word. Y'all should know what it means. What's reciprocal mean? Okay, anybody know what reciprocating saw is? Yeah, back and forth. Reciprocating is the back and forth motion. The principle of reciprocity is given, it shall be given unto you. That's in the context of judgment. But it's that idea that you must give to receive, that giving back and forth. And here's what David says. The Lord will repay each man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. That's verse 23 and 24. As your life was highly valued in my sight, so my life be highly valued in the sight of the Lord. Did you notice that? Wait a minute. I valued your life, Saul. I expect you to value mine. Is that what he said? No. He knows the return on the investment, if I can use that, comes from God. He says, it's God that will reward each man for being faithful and righteous. It doesn't matter if pastor acknowledges your volunteer work this week. It comes from God. Now, I tried to do that, but it's not the point. But it's from the Lord. David recognizes that if he does the right thing, it isn't Saul that rewards him with the right behavior. It's God that brings the reward when you do things God's way. He makes that recognition. Saul's response is similar to the like he was the last time. The last time he says to him, let me see. Now I know you will surely be king, and the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. That's what Saul says last time. Then he says, don't kill all my kids when you become king. And this time he says, blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail. Why do you keep fighting then? What's interesting to me is so many people will stand against Christ, against the gospel, against Christianity, no matter what the evidence is, and they'll just keep doing it knowing they're wrong. So they'll make up ideas like dark matter. and multiple universes to try to figure it out, because the evidence shows them one place and they simply don't want to. They end up being worldview problems, is what they are, and they don't want to come to the answer, so they just flat ignore them. You can watch that in Israel today. Let me watch this. For example, let me see. It's my troops in Jerusalem. My government meets in Jerusalem. Now I get upset because the U.S. puts an embassy there. We're simply recognizing what is. It's about time. But everybody acts like this was a new thing. They can't accept the fact that decades ago, Israel took Jerusalem. They just can't accept that. So they're saying this is our capital. No, your government doesn't meet here. No, your army's not here. I know this will get me email, okay? But it's that kind of thing. The obvious is right in front of it. You can't admit Israel's blessed. You can't admit everybody else around them in the desert can't grow a dadgum thing, but you go to Israel and they make the thing blossom. No, they're not blessed. I forget the number of how many Nobel Prize winners have been Jewish people. I mean, it's so disproportionate compared to the size of the population they are, but they're not blessed. You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing in Israel. But I see it everywhere, no matter what the evidence is. No matter, yeah, I know you, yeah, you'll be king. Yeah, you'll surely prevail, but I'm going to fight you all along the way. I find it interesting, young people, you want everything mom and dad have, but you're not willing to do what they did to get there. The evidence shows if you use this kind of wisdom, you get here. The evidence shows if you do this, the marriage lasts. The evidence shows if you do this, you can have a comfortable life. But dad, I don't want to do it that way. Oh, okay. Can I have the car keys, please? No. You getting the contradiction, young people? You don't want to do it dad's way, but you want to use his car. Well, how do you think you got one? By working, not sitting on the computer. Did I say that out loud, Autumn? I did, didn't I? Now, I like computer, and I like playing games on it. Why do we go to church every time the doors open? Dad, can I stay home? Then you come to dad for advice. Wonder why that is. Maybe you should do what dad did. Or does? Maybe dad learned by doing it. I'm meddling, but anyway. Well, we look at these things, and you say, how can Saul keep fighting something he knows is working? We do it all the time. We do the opposite of what we know. And Jesus says this, says when you preach this against this and go do this, you got problems. Or you preach to do this and you don't do this, even if it's for good reasons. Example, you do go do this, give money to the synagogue, but you don't take care of mom and dad. You got a good religious reason, but you don't take care of mom and dad. You hypocrite. So now I'm going to poke you. Can I poke you? I hear this all the time in the conservative Christian realm. Well, if they're not going to work, they don't eat. There's no moochers. That's the idea, right? You work. Don't expect me to pay for your welfare. You should work. You don't get a free ride unless the offering plate passes by. You don't think so? 2% on average in evangelical churches are moochers. 2% are not regular supporters, are the only ones that are regular supporters. You know what that means? 98% are exactly what you've been preaching against. Oh, I know, that got quiet. You should see the look on your faces. You're going to talk about the church, you're going to talk about Christianity, how our culture needs what the church has. But is the offering, and I notice I'm doing this after the offering. I'm not trying to get you to give more today. But it's just one of those places I find we as Christians are hypocrites. We know the answer is in Christ and what he does in the church, but I will let someone else support it while I take the free ride, which I complain about when it comes to government. But you know the answer is Christ, and that's the problem with our society, not the government. You know David's going to accomplish what God has for him, but he offends me. How does he offend me? He's successful and I'm not. That's basically his problem. And he saw that God was with him. We talked about that before.
Saul recognizes David is blessed, that God has a plan for him. But notice this too. David didn't claim that he had a special gift of sneaking. He's done it twice now. It's not. The first time, Saul's awake, sneaks up on him enough to cut his coat. This time he sneaks into the camp. Right next to his head is the spear and jug, and he takes it. He didn't say, well, God's given me the gift of sneakiness. And he to use that gift to promote himself, take care of Saul. He recognized that it was God. Matter of fact, I think it's verse 12. It says, and God put them to sleep. You know what else I see that? Adam and Eve. When God puts you to sleep, you sleep. I wish he'd do that with me once in a while, just get a good night. Anyway, but he doesn't say, well, this is my gift. You don't understand, Saul. You're not making room for my gift, so I got to oppose you. He recognized that his gift is submissive to Saul's authority for now. Sometimes, temptation is not of spiritual nature. Sometimes it comes from your best friend. Who was the instrument of temptation for David to kill Saul? His own nephew. Oh, man, this is your, I know you're the guy, man. This is your, God's got us in here. This is your chance. Promote yourself. Well, that sort of makes sense. You're right, I am sort of gifted. And God told me I'm going to be the next king. So, see, we tend to think that temptation only comes from R-rated movies or something. Or your unsaved friends. Remember, it was Peter that spoke against Christ's destiny.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcast. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.